All right, some of you were either here or you might have listened to it, but a few weeks ago, I think I did a talk on the fourth foundation of mindfulness. I want to continue that and offer a different kind of a reframe around liberation. My trail of breadcrumbs that I've been following has been panning out handsomely lately, so I'm happy to be having this conversation. So you've probably heard me talk about this before. I was kind of on my soapbox about this a while ago, and that in the early teachings, the Buddha talks about, so the word that we don't hear a lot about, you know, we hear the word liberation. So liberation, enlightenment, awakening, freedom, nibbana, equanimity, all these words, dharma, I think they're all kind of basically pointing to the same experience, which makes practice confusing because you're like, well, which one should I be having? And there's maybe like seven or eight terms, I think, that are kind of basically pointing at the same thing. Now, the process for how we get there, we see two terms. One of the terms is, so the word vimutti in Pali means liberation. Panya vimutti, which is liberation through wisdom, is one path. Probably the path that's predominant in the most Buddhist traditions and certainly predominant in the Theravada and certainly the American insight tradition. And then there's this other path, I think, that's better for us, and that's citta vimutti. Citta meaning something like heart, mind, mind, consciousness. A hard word to translate. I would say it's probably the entire emotional cognitive experience construct. It's kind of basically the whole mind, and it's also the way that the mind is behaving. So it's probably best to recognize that citta is a behavior. It's what the mind is doing in every single moment. And I don't know about your mind, but my mind's always doing something. I've yet to have the experience where I look in my mind and my mind goes, yeah, dude, I'm out. I got nothing for you. I'm done. It's never done that once. It never, ever. It's like, yeah, whatever you want to do today is cool with me. I'm taking the day off. Never. So citta being a behavior. And so when we look at the practice of Panya Vimutti, which is the one that we are probably most taught. And of course, I believe that this is a much of a monastic bias around, like, we need to understand essentially the nature of consciousness, and that if we can pierce into the universe and we can recognize the three characteristics, which is generally what we're being taught, if I can see that all things are impermanent, all things are unsatisfactory, all things are not self, if I really had that knowledge, then I would break through into some understanding, knowing of things in a way that I wouldn't suffer anymore. You might have heard this framework before. And you actually might have had experiences like this on retreat. I know I have. They don't last. But we've all had those experiences where we're sitting there and we're like, any second now, or like, I'm seeing clearly, right? It's like, you just can't take it with you. And so when we look at the factors of awakening, which is the kind of way that that happens in the fourth foundation, we see that there's mindfulness followed by Dhamma Vichaya, which is investigation, which is a very kind of cold, dry analysis into experience. And then that gives rise to these jhana kind of absorption experiences. There's penetration into investigation, which gives us energy, which gives us joy, which gives us contentment, which gives us concentration, focus, which gives us equanimity, which is a very, I've never been actually that interested in the awakening factors. They don't resonate with me so much, but that's what we sort of get. And so if we were to take, so, and I'm totally have no basis to say what I'm going to say right now. It's not rooted in anything but my own ideas. So I'm not even stealing this from somebody. So take it with a grain of salt. But I think that if we look at the fourth foundation through the lens of citta vimutti, I think that what we see is actually a list of five. Instead of the five awakening factors, I would say that we see a list of five, which starts with mindfulness and then go through the four Brahma Viharas. So if we look at the awakening factors, it starts with mindfulness and it ends with equanimity. And it's all these kind of absorption-like nature of universe experience factors, right? Totally no problem. But if we look at mindfulness to equanimity through the Brahma Viharas, instead of investigating and doing all these kind of dry analysis, we bring mindfulness into the mind, and then we recognize, is there a kind, cooperative friendliness actually happening in my mind? Is that happening? And, you know, it's usually pretty easy to discern if that's true or not, isn't it? And then we notice if the experience is difficult, or if so maybe there's aversion in the mind. There's a kind of not wanting. There's painfulness. There's a woundedness. There's a feeling bad about oneself or judgment or whatever. Then we know that we can lean that metta into compassion a little bit more. And then that compassion would lead to equanimity. And then there would be an understanding. I would be aware in the present moment. I would be able to meet the conditions appropriately. I would see that things were hard. I would be able to have some compassion. And then I would have equanimity. Right? That's one citta vimutti. There's the kind of harder side of experience. And there's the other citta vimutti, which would be mindfulness, kindness, and noticing if the experience is favorable or pleasing or enjoyable, then I could actually have mudita, or appreciative joy or gratitude for that experience. And then that gratitude would become equanimous. And so I said this before, and this is true, the Satipatthana is not... The Satipatthana is a teaching that was cobbled together from a bunch of other teachings. It was kind of manufactured later. So whoever manufactured it later certainly had some bias and some ways in which they wanted to frame that. So I'm going to essentially do the same thing. Because also, interestingly enough, if we look at the foundations of mindfulness, if we kind of just go with that trope, we have the body, right? We become more aware of our somatic experience. We have our feelings. We become more aware of hedonic and unworldly kind of pleasure of the senses, internal pleasure, feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And then we go to the third foundation of mindfulness, which is what? Mindfulness of citta. There's that word again. And then if we look at the third foundation of mindfulness, the whole game, the whole goal of the third foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of citta, is to recognize if greed, hatred, or confusion is in my mind or not. And then that becomes a right effort thing. If greed, hatred, and confusion are in my mind, I need to recognize them and overcome them. And then if I do that, then now I'm in the fourth foundation of mindfulness. And at this point, if we really follow the structure accordingly, by the time I'm in the fourth foundation of mindfulness, I should have probably overcome the destructive citta that's been there. So now I can just kind of fall into this Brahma-vihara experience. I don't necessarily need to be mindful and investigating things. I'm actually pretty good now. No greed, no hatred, no confusion in my mind. I'm aware. In sixth grade science, we would say that I'm homeostatic. My nervous system is regulated because I've done my first foundation of mindfulness. I'm not clinging after pleasure or pushing away pain because I've cleaned that up in the second foundation. I'm not grasping at mental objects in my mind by planning, controlling, fixing, avoiding. I'm actually just here. Now I have this open awareness lens of the fourth foundation of mindfulness. Why I need to go back and investigate and do all this kind of... First of all, if I'm moving around the world and I'm, you know, navigating myself through the world, through people and relationships, I'm not really going to be able to investigate and to do these kind of, maybe on the cushion I can do that, but I'm on the cushion at best 30 minutes a day. What am I supposed to do with the other 23 and a half hours? What I do with the other 23 half hours, and the reason I say this is actually what I feel like I do. People ask me what I do, is if I notice I'm in that kind of homeostatic mindfulness place, then I just notice what's coming in and out of my experience and what the relationship is. Can I actually meet everything with metta? Can't always do that. Can I meet myself with metta because I can't meet the experience with metta? Sure, I can do that sometimes. And then actually here, I'm really just using the heart practices as really what I would say in a very simple sense. My friend wrote a book on it. What I'm practicing is relational mindfulness. Is that at the fourth foundation, when I'm using a citta vimutti path, I'm actually just going through the world. I'm checking out my relationship to everything that's coming and going, and I'm seeing if I can meet that with these constructive, there's that word again, mental states, which is, again, another right effort practice. Now I'm doing constructive citta. Because the greed, hatred, confusion thing is not a problem now. Hindrances aren't a problem now. And I can't tell you how many times I've been on retreat in this experience doing the Vipassana thing, the Dhamma Vichaya thing, and just looking for problems when there aren't any. And then eventually, if I look for problems when there aren't any, I'm probably going to find one. And it might only take about 30 or 40 seconds at best. And then I'm back in the whole thing again. Now, the other problem with these lists is that if you look at... Batchelor uses this, but he took this in the Abhidharma. I don't know if he did. But there's what are called 32 awakening factors. There's a list of 32 things. There are lists of lists that the Buddha basically outlines in the Abhidharma, that these are the things that you need to be doing. And no big surprise, they are the four foundations of mindfulness, the four great efforts, the four accomplishments, the five faculties, the seven factors of awakening, and the Noble Eightfold Path. Pretty standard list, but that's sort of like what Batchelor calls a culture of awakening, the 32. Now, again, no Brahmaviharas in that list. No Brahmaviharas in the Satipatthana. In fact, the weird thing about the Brahmaviharas that I really find very bizarre is it's its own list. It's not inside another list anywhere in the canon. It's just a standalone list. And so I don't understand why that's been the case. And then I think it gets taught as kind of a, like an add-on later. In the general theories, if you ask somebody like who I love and respect, like Ajahn Sucitto, if you ask these kind of Panyavimutti practitioners or even like a Goldstein, they would say, well, if you do the mindfulness wisdom thing right, then the Brahmaviharas come later. Like, and that's the understanding. Now, I don't know anybody who's ever experienced it. But they generally fall under that theory that the mindfulness, when cultivated and done properly, that it just leads to these Brahmaviharas. And I'm not saying that may or may not be true, but I'm not waiting. Why wait? Like, at what point do we get to these? So the other thing that's interesting, the only other place they show up, and I am famous for getting on my soapbox about these, is in the Abhidharma list of mental factors, in which there are 52, in which there are five categories. And one thing that I've always liked is that 26 of the 52 mental factors in the Abhidharma are beautiful, are wholesome, are constructive. So that's pretty good. Half of them are great. And there are what you guys, I'm sure many of you have heard me talk about this many times. I teach this very regularly, which is the teachings on the illimitables, which is, big surprise, compassion and gratitude, compassion and appreciative joy, karuna and mudita. Now, they do show up. That's the only other place that I've ever seen, and I've scoured the canon, where and it's not metta and equanimity aren't there. They're kind of implied, is that they show up in the beautiful mental factors. And so, if we're practicing Buddhist psychology in that sense, we can come to understand that when we want to see these, they're illimitable, meaning that there's no end to the amount of suffering that one can experience. Therefore, there's no limit to the amount of compassion one can cultivate. And just like there's no limit to the amount of joy and the amount of beauty in this world, there's no limit to the amount of gratitude and appreciation one can cultivate to meet those. And I know that we could probably all do autobiographies on the joy and sorrow dynamic, all of the sadness and the sorrow of your life and the joy and the gratitude of your life. And every day we kind of have to find a middle way between those, don't we? You know, I don't want to avoid or suppress the things that have been challenging to me. But I also don't want to just cling to the good stuff. We have to keep these things in balance. So if you feel so inclined, I feel there's an alternative awakening factor list in the fourth foundation, which would just be mindfulness, kindness, compassion, gratitude, and equanimity. And you could use it in conjunction, I think, with the awakening factors. I think they're definitely not in any opposition of each other, without a doubt. Interestingly enough, also in the Abhidharma, the list that shows up right before the illimitables is all the other awakening factors. neutrality of mind, tranquility of mind, malleability of mind, all these kind of very subtle meditative kind of experiences, which definitely get the privilege in the mindfulness, in the kind of secular, not secular, but in the insight Theravada world, that what we're going for, generally speaking, is a kind of experience that's understanding things the way they are, right? And it's just, I think it's this big snake oil salesman kind of thing. And I've went through it, and I go through it, and I think everybody goes through it. And I think when people come to Buddhism, they go through it a lot. And I have this conversation with people all the time, is that people come to Buddhism often because they're confused, or their life really hasn't panned out the way they thought it was going to. And they're starting to recognize that there's something about their internal experience that seems a little bit too hard. And the carrot is, well, Buddhism sort of seems to have the corner on the market of this kind of stuff. And there's this something that I need to know. There's something that I don't know. And if I knew it, then everything would somehow be easier, or I wouldn't suffer, or life would make more sense, or, you know, whatever. This kind of mind state that I think is actually only attainable by moment-to-moment experience. If all phenomenon in the universe is impermanent, then how can there be some final state in which we arrive at where everything's just easy? How would that even work? And so, and we all follow that too. And I've done that too. I'm like, I remember, you know, going through teacher training and doing, I'm like, okay, once I understand the 12 links of dependent origination, then I'll be happy. Once I can memorize all these lists, I'll be happy. Once I give a good Dharma talk at a retreat in front of 70 people and a few people cry, then I'll be happy. Like, just on and on and on and on it goes. Right? And now it's like, once I stop trying to think I'll be happy when something happens, then I'll be happy. Like, you know what I mean? It's just endless. So I thought we could do a practice on this. And so what we'll do is mindfulness, and so we'll do a full Brahma Vihara practice. And I think we have to put mindfulness at the top of the list, because I think without recognition, we really can't do much. So the kind of the lens here in this fourth foundation lens is mindfulness as recognition, recognizing what's going on, and then seeing if we can get a sense for the relationship. This is what's happening in my experience. Can I be kind? This is what's happening in my experience. Is it difficult or challenging? Can I have compassion? Is it, you know, so it's really a relational. It's also, I like it too, because it's very active. Like, I've been doing this for the last couple months, and when I sit down, I don't feel like I'm just trying to get in this dry monitoring state. I sit down, I'm like, okay, man, this is a work. And a lot of times I'm like, I recognize this in my mind, and I'm like, can I meet this with kindness? And a lot of times the answer is no. No, not this. I mean, you know. And then it's like, well, can I be kind with that? And it's like, maybe. So how far back do I have to, how many step backwards backs do I have to take before I can go, okay, I think I can maybe be in this moment.